There's no doubting the fact, were you to drive up and down the streets of Detroit, you'd likely see many areas that might bring to mind a moonscape instead of a neighborhood, the vacant buildings, the empty lots. But where many people look at these Detroit scenes and see ruins, others see opportunity and the chance to build a new kind of urban life from the ground up, an incredible experiment with the urban landscape. University of Michigan architecture professor Andrew Hersher has written a book about these urban pioneers out from the University of Michigan Press. It's called The Unreal Estate Guide to Detroit. And I started by asking Andrew just what unreal estate is.
Unreal estate is the name I give to urban space that's lost economic value to the point when it can support other sorts of values, values that are impossible to support when urban space functions as real estate.
So when it's functioning as real estate, we're looking at homes and businesses, and that's what it's there to support when we're saying it's real estate.
Exactly. And when people leave homes and when businesses fail and when property values decline, the buildings and the property that they occupy become available to be used and occupied and appropriated in different ways. And these are ways that are impossible to do and sometimes even to imagine in cities that function with a real estate market.
So when you're in an area, let's just contrast, let's say, city of Chicago and its outlying areas, not that there aren't depressed and blighted neighborhoods there too, but there does seem to be much more in terms of functioning real estate there. But what I think I hear you're saying is because things have kind of caved in to such a point in many of Detroit's neighborhoods, it basically creates a blank slate.
Well, I wouldn't say a blank slate.
Okay.
What it does, and this is something that we know all too well, is it creates lots of problems. Mm-hmm. It creates empty neighborhoods. It creates disinvestment. It creates a declining tax base. Those are stories that we know very well.
Yes.
We're very aware of in Detroit. What I'm interested in is something else that it creates, which are conditions of possibility to live in the city differently and to do different things in the city. And unreal estate is the name I give for the platform for those other ways of imagining and inhabiting the city.
So give us a sense of what other ways of imagining and inhabiting a city are emerging even now, right? There are urban pioneers coming in and kind of applying their imagination and vision.
Yeah. Well, in Detroit, the individuals and the communities that have taken advantage of what I call unreal estate are really quite various. They include activists, artists, architects, anarchists, community groups, block clubs, outsider collectors and curators of urban ephemera, urban explorers, urban gardeners, urban scavengers, and many, many others, in fact. And they're all involved in what I see as a particular sort of informal, everyday urbanism that's availing itself of easily available urban space.
And this sounds like it is an interesting, eclectic mix of residents and newcomers.
Yeah.
Like room for everybody.
Well, I'm not sure everybody, but certainly a very diverse group of people and a very diverse set of interests. And what that yields is a very diverse set of projects and practices. In other words, some of the ways that unreal estate has been reappropriated are very small scale and ephemeral. Some of them are larger scale and longer term. Some are public. Others are hidden.
Hmm.
Some are legal, others are illegal. Some are what I regard to be very politically acute. Some are what I regard to be very politically naive. They all have in common an emergence in a city where urban space is far more available for reappropriation and reuse than in cities with intact functional real estate markets.
So we've kind of set the table with the fact that this unreal estate exists. So give us some examples, Andrew, of the kinds of projects that are starting to bubble up and really provide signs of hope for a new way of living in a big city.
Well, some examples of what I call unreal estate development are very well known to Detroiters. The Bog Center, for example, the Heidelberg Project, for example, mm-hmm. the Earthworks Urban Farm. Others, I think, are known to more specific sorts of communities or interest groups. And actually, one of the things that the book tries to do is bring together projects and activities that usually, I think, are seen in isolation from one another.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, for example, in a discussion of what I call temporary communities, and these are communities that coalesce around events and then disperse after those events are over, I discuss John's Carpet House, which is a kind of open-air juke joint that takes place on a vacant lot on the east side of Detroit on Sunday afternoons in the spring and the summer and the early fall. I also discuss a now regretfully shut down project called Theater Bazaar, which is now taking place elsewhere and was closed down in 2010 because they did not apply for the necessary permits to have
They were in abandoned houses and doing kind of a circus. I remember reading about this in the paper. So they didn't have the permits. And it leads me to wonder, how are these different kinds of projects being received by city officials? Whether it's police, whether it's zoning officials, whether it's City Hall.
In a real diversity of ways. But as the example of Theater Bazaar indicates, that real estate development is precarious. It's fragile. At times it's illegal or furtive. And so in a city like Detroit, those kinds of things can often take place without being noticed or regulated. But when they are noticed or regulated, then they sometimes disappear.
Okay. And it draws people to the area.
It draws people to the area, and then those people disperse. And this, I think, is one of the characteristics of unreal estate, because value doesn't have to be accrued in economic terms, then there's no need to do the kinds of things that you need to do.
No maintenance.
And very little investment, no need to amortize your investment and so forth and so on.
So that provides opportunities that would not exist, especially for young people.
Absolutely.
Trying to get whatever it is started out. If you're just joining us, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty on Michigan Radio, and we're talking with University of Michigan architecture professor Andrew Hersher. You've given us in your book, The Unreal Estate Guide to Detroit, some really intriguing words and phrases. They were new to me, and I really found them intriguing. So I'd like you to explain them and give us some examples. Municipal therapy. I love that term.
Municipal therapy is what I call a process that takes place in a city like Detroit, where the city itself is not able to take care of its own resources, things like parks.
Keeping the grass mowed at a corner park.
Right. And what happens sometimes is that individuals and communities self-organize to take care of the city by themselves, for themselves.
Bottom up.
Yeah. And I think what happens then is people develop a very different sort of relationship to the city that they live in, because instead of delegating responsibility for maintaining and taking care of the city, they take on that responsibility for themselves.
And you've got a great photograph in your book of the Detroit Mower Gang. And there they are. And I also know the Navin Field grounds crew comes out and keeps the beloved field there, and they come down and play games. So that is all ground up kinds of things. Well, city's not going to do it, we're going to do it.
Yeah, and I think those are both great examples, because in both cases, those groups have a far more intimate relationship to the places that they take care of than you would have if they were merely using those places and then leaving them for somebody else to take responsibility for.
So let's flip over to Ruin Harvest.
Ruin Harvest is a term that I coined, and it describes a very different kind of relationship to abandoned and empty buildings. In a ruin harvest, ruins aren't either visualized as entrancing spectacles as they are in ruin porn, nor are they demolished as eyesores, which is something that the city of Detroit is doing. Instead, they are harvested to do things that you couldn't do with occupied inhabitable architecture. For example, in one project, the Firebreak project, which is conducted by the Detroit Collaborative Design Center at the University of Detroit Mercy, community groups get in contact with the design center to do something collectively with an abandoned or vacant building in their neighborhood. A building was converted into a kind of surface on which movies were projected so that open-air cinemas could take place during the summer. Other buildings were turned into platforms for a kind of open-air concerts. And so there, in a sense, that's the kind of almost the direct opposite to ruin pornography, because there the ruin becomes something else, not a ruin, but a kind of active, functioning part of a neighborhood or a community.
As an architect, Andrew Hersher, I want to ask you, when you drive around neighborhoods in the city of Detroit, and I'm sure other cities as well that have blighted areas, a lot of people would see blight and bad circumstances. Do you see hope?
I think it's all too easy to see signs of hopelessness in a city like Detroit. At the same time, I think it's all too easy to be naively hopeful about a city like Detroit. In other words, to see it as what's often called a blank canvas for artistic experimentation.
Yes.
I see Detroit as a very distinct phenomenon, a phenomenon in which there are possibilities to rethink, reimagine the city, and also very real conditions of suffering and impoverishment. And I think the challenge that Detroit presents us is to think those two conditions together. I should also say that my book is not intended to advance any sort of solution to the mm-hmm. very real problems that beset Detroit. I'm instead trying to document a condition, and I think it's a condition that's often overlooked or neglected, especially in narratives that pose Detroit as a kind of empty city or a vacant city or an abandoned city. I think if you look closely at Detroit, what you can see are spaces that might look empty from a distance, mm-hmm. but that they're actually occupied or used, albeit at times in very subtle, provisional, or hidden ways.
It almost, maybe I'm wrong in this, but I almost get the sense it is not unlike a large urban laboratory where experiments in creative use can be tried out. So my question here then is, what kinds of takeaways, what kind of lessons can be learned from what's going here that could be applied to other cities that are depressed and blighted?
I'm trying to provide information and ideas to allow questions like that to be answered and perhaps to prompt other sorts of questions mm-hmm. like that rather than to provide answers to them. But I do hope that it provides information and ideas that we can use to think about questions about how Detroit should move forward in a better way. Well, what's on the table right now, at least from the side of the city, is a kind of top-down planning. This is downsizing or mm-hmm. right-sizing. Now, advocates of downsizing or right-sizing might look at what my book documents, informal urban culture, as meaning not much of anything at all. But for those people who are looking for alternatives to top-down planning, then informal urbanism might actually present another way of surviving or even transforming Detroit, a way that relies on self-organization, bottom-up initiatives, informality, rather than the kind of formal processes that the city has on offer.
The book is The Unreal Estate Guide to Detroit. Professor Andrew Hersher is the author, and he's an associate professor of architecture at the University of Michigan, also the co-founder of the Detroit Unreal Estate Agency, research on urban crisis using Detroit as such an important focal point. Thanks for talking with us today on Stateside.
Thank you.